Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone in the franchise world. My name is Paul Segretto, and this is Franchise Today. Today, my guest will be Catherine Monson, CEO at Fast Signs International. We'll be talking about international franchising. On the line with me also is my co-producer, Joe Caruso. Joe, welcome again to Franchise Today.
Good afternoon, Paul. Great to be here. We've got a great show in store for everybody, and it's nice sunny weather here in Maryland.
Well, it's a little bit dismal down here in South Texas. Last week, you know, Joe, we had Lonnie Helgerson on. We talked about veterans and franchising. Do you have any parting comments to that show or anything that stood out in your mind with that show?
Well, I think Lonnie did a great job of dispelling a lot of the myths about vets and franchising and really about practices that franchisors should employ in order to make their vet fran program work. It's you know, not a just add water kind of scenario with vet fran, and you really have to make a commitment to the program, and it's just like any other kind of franchise recruitment that you're engaged in. And Lonnie, I think, did a terrific job of shining a bright light on what you should be doing, and I encourage anybody that's interested in vet fran to call Lonnie up and get more details from him about the program.
Yeah, Lonnie is definitely one of the foremost experts on military and franchising, veterans and franchising. I had a lengthy conversation with Lonnie this morning and talking about it. He's not only very knowledgeable about it, certainly extremely passionate about it, and I think that's key. It was a great show. Joe, we've got some good guests coming on, too, in the future. Give us a little bit of a rundown of what to expect in the next coming weeks.
Well, I have to correct you there, Paul. We only have great guests.
There you go.
And next week's guest is so great that we're going to do an encore performance for the episode with Bob Coleman on credit access, leading into a live show with Ron Feldman on the 22nd of March on franchise finance. Then we'll have Brad Fishman on March 29th doing a recap of the Franchise Unconference in Park City, Utah. And then we lead into our, we have a show with a representative from the IFA talking about the Small Business Lending Summit, which will be happening in April. And then we go into our annual franchise legal series. This will be the third series we've done, and that begins on April 12th and ends on May 24th.
Certainly an exciting time for Franchise Today. I'm really looking forward to the legal series. We've got some great guests lined up, including Lee Plave, Leslie Curran, Warren Lewis, Lane Fisher, and others. I think it's really going to be a great event, and certainly we're already getting a lot of interest in it. I could just tell by looking at the replays of the second legal series and the first legal series on demand at Franchise Today. If you want to access that, it's at blogtalkradio.com/franchisetodayshow. All the shows, including today's, will be available on demand. Today's guest is Catherine Monson, CEO at Fast Signs International. Catherine was named CEO of Fast Signs in December 2008, bringing with her a strong background in franchising and digital printing. In addition to her previous role as president of PIP Printing, she worked with Sir Speedy and Multicopy Europe, serving in operations, franchise development, sales training, and marketing communications, a graduate of Pepperdine University with a Bachelor of Science degree in Business Administration. Catherine currently serves on the board of the International Franchise Association and on the National Education Foundation Board of Trustees for Pi Sigma Epsilon, the National Sales and Marketing Fraternity for college and university students. Catherine also has the designation of Certified Franchise Executive through the Institute of Certified Franchise Executives at the IFA. Very well known in franchise community. Catherine, welcome to Franchise Today.
Well, thank you. It is great to be here. I'm looking forward to this time.
Well, we're looking forward to the conversation as well as our listeners. So, but, you know, before we begin talking about international franchising, which, of course, is the topic of today's show, I know our listeners are dying to hear about your upcoming appearance on CBS Undercover Boss. And I understand that there's only so much you can share at this time about the show. And we do know that there have been some press releases that kind of teased us about it. What can you tell us about the show, and then we'll move into the meat of today's topic?
Well, I have to tell you, I was really honored when I was contacted about going undercover. I thought it was an outstanding opportunity. You know, I visit a lot of Fast Lines locations, but typically they know in advance that I'm coming, and they know who I am, and they always want to show me what they think I want to see. And that was not the case at all going undercover. I cannot share with you until after the show airs where I went, how many jobs I did, what a fool I made of myself in many of the jobs or any of those things. I did have the pleasure of creating a really great persona. I don't think that I actually have an alter ego, but I came up with a goth rocker chick as my undercover identity. And my brother, when he saw a picture, said, if you had walked by me down the street, I would have no idea who you were. So clearly the disguise was very, very effective. We have just very recently sent to all of our franchise partners kind of a Catherine next to Louise counter card and some banner artwork so they can start letting their customers know about the Undercover Boss episode. And even my franchise partners who have seen that have said, I would not have known. You could have been in my center and I would not have known. But it was a great experience, loads of fun, and you know, really gives you as a CEO an outstanding appreciation for the skill and the knowledge that's necessary on the part of every single team member. And sometimes I think as CEOs, we get so busy doing what we do, we don't always understand and appreciate that to the degree that we need to. And it was an outstanding opportunity to really get, if you will, a hands-on experience.
Well, certainly franchising has gotten to be in the spotlight with CBS Undercover Boss. I mean, recently, you know, Checkers, the Dwyer Group, Brightstar, 7-Eleven, and others, and I think it's just great shedding some light on franchising, and happy to say that you're the third CEO within franchising that's also been on the Franchise Today show that's been on CBS Undercover Boss. A couple of weeks ago we had Dina Dwyer-Owens of the Dwyer Group, and a couple of months ago we had Shelley Sun from Brightstar, so I'm really excited about all that, and maybe Franchise Today will become the alter ego for CBS Undercover Boss in the future.
Sounds good to me.
I know, Joe, you would like that a lot too, right?
I'll be very, very interesting.
Yeah, it would be. Well, Catherine, recently Fast Signs International announced that it had a deal to open 5 locations in Puerto Rico. What were your initial thoughts when you learned that there may be an opportunity to take Fast Signs to Puerto Rico?
Well, you know, Puerto Rico is one of many areas where we want to grow our brand. We had identified Puerto Rico proactively. We actually went down to Puerto Rico with a delegation from the International Franchise Association this time last year because there was some anti-franchisor legislation that had been proposed down there. And we wanted to go down and explain that there are very many positives to franchising. And we wanted to do that because we had Puerto Rico on our list of places to expand to. And if this particular legislation had been passed, we would have not gone down to Puerto Rico because it was very onerous and very limiting to what a franchisor could do. And we had been looking for partners. One of our strategies in our international development is to look for partners that have some experience either in our industry or a closely related industry. So small format printing is a very closely related industry to large format printing and signage. And we've been spending a lot of time at signage and print industry trade shows actually exhibiting, looking for conversions and or international candidates. And through this process and having Puerto Rico on our list of areas in which we wanted to expand, through our exhibiting at the Specialty Graphics and Imaging Show, SGIA, last year, we came in contact with this company down in Puerto Rico that is a large print and advertising company, and they really wanted to expand the signed part of their business. And as a result, we've got some amazing partners that really understand the digital part of the business, the advertising and marketing part of the business, and we're bringing to them the ability to use our systems, our procedures, and our brands to really expand the large format and signage part of the business. So we identified Puerto Rico as a market we wanted to do business in and then found the right partner to do that with us.
When you looked at Puerto Rico further as the interest came about, were there any additional considerations that you gave as you explored the possibilities, especially since you may have at that point already known which individuals or which group of individuals was interested?
Well, you know, when we think of Puerto Rico, I mean, that's a natural extension or expansion for us. We also expanded into the Grand Cayman Islands last year. And, you know, generally the closer you are geographically as you expand, the little bit easier it is to support. It's a little more challenging sometimes for us to support our franchise partners down in Australia because there's not very much overlap in time when we're both in, you know, the office at the same time. These particular partners of ours down in Puerto Rico, we brought in kind of under our conversion / franchising program in that we do, when someone is bringing us existing business, give them some lower royalties in the first few years because they're bringing us incremental business that they already had. And so we modified our approach because they were existing in our business or a category already.
With that in mind, and also when you talk about conversions, I mean, obviously it creates a whole plethora of things to think about. Were there any potential negatives that immediately came to mind?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily call them potential negatives. I just think it's reality. When you are franchising your brand in the United States, basically, it's, and I don't mean this next descriptor I'm going to use as negative, but there's very much of a cookie-cutter approach. You know exactly
right.
What you're looking for in real estate. You know your supply chain. You know what equipment is going to be in the store. You know what recipes you're going to use. Typically, the tastes of the buyer, if we're in food, are going to be pretty uniform across the United States. When you go internationally, there is a lot of exceptions to the rules. You have to take into account the culture. You have to take into account the language, the different customs. The supply chain may change. So there's a lot of challenges. I don't think of them as negative. I just think that's a fact of life. It's just part of doing business in different countries. Likewise, when you're doing conversions, you have to think in terms of what period of time are you going to give them to rebrand your brand and how are you going to retrofit their location. And you're not necessarily going to have them discard all of their existing equipment, so what equipment are you going to have require them to buy? So rather than being a very cookie-cutter approach where it's fairly typical from location to location, there are a lot of exceptions and a lot of thinking about how do we modify this or customize this. And so whether we're talking about conversion locations in the United States or international expansion, it's not as easy. It's not as by the book as if we're just talking about direct franchising in the United States. But I don't see that as a negative. I just see that as reality.
Sure. It's a reality check. And as we're talking about reality, as you know, Franchise Today has many, many relatively young franchisors, part of our growing audience. And of course, when I say young, I'm referring to new to franchising. And you know, many have aspirations of going global. They want to be the next, you know, McDonald's, the next KFC, in this case, maybe the next Fast Signs. What would you say to these individuals when hearing about their lofty goals and wanting to go, you know, global?
Well, I happen to be a huge believer in having lofty goals. I think that those are very important. I think that if we shoot for the sun, we're probably only going to get to the moon, so let's shoot for the stars so we can get to the sun. So, one, I wouldn't discourage them, but I would say you have to go about this in a very thoughtful and planned approach. If you have a concept here that you're, that's going well for you, it's a company-owned concept, you now want to start franchising in the United States, I would make sure you had your franchising house in order. I'd make certain that you had all of the systems and procedures in place to where you were giving very good support and service to your new United States franchise partners before I started thinking about doing that in a different country, because every country brings on a new layer of complication and challenge. That's just reality. And what you don't want to have happen is that absorb your resources that should be supporting your U.S. franchise partners, and then as a result get into a situation where your U.S. franchise partners are dissatisfied. If you aren't doing a good job taking care of your U.S. franchisees, then it's going to be really difficult for you to expand, because those international franchise candidates are going to be doing validation probably with the United States franchisees, just as U.S. candidates do validation. The thing is, you just have to be very thoughtful about the resources. The international growth absorbs even more resources than you thought thought possible, much more executive time. I'm deeply involved with every potential qualified international candidate that we have, and that certainly takes some time away from what I can do from our domestic franchise partners. But I've got an established, seasoned executive team that works for me, so I'm not concerned about my ability or our ability to support our U.S. franchisees. So it's just very important that you make sure you have the resources, the knowledgeable and experienced manpower to, one, grow globally as well as maintain and continue to grow domestically.
And I think that's a key point, the ability as well as the understanding that you have to delegate certain things. You can't possibly try to handle it all yourself, especially when you're operating domestically and internationally. And to your point, and I know Joe will agree, because I've heard him mention it on the air before when we talk about international franchising, that it certainly costs you much more than you would think when you venture into international franchising. Joe, knowing that you've been involved in international franchising, Gloria Jeans down in Australia and other brands, would you care to expand upon your thought about costs spiraling often out of control when entering international franchising?
Well, I think the three areas that are very ripe for having be money sucks would be how often you're going to visit the market, your people in the market. In international franchising, there has been a trend with some franchisors to actually charge the franchisees for the visits and then make so many visits mandatory. And if there's going to be additional visits, who pays? And I think that has to be very, very clear what the support's going to be and who's going to pay for all of the costs associated. The other is translation. If you've got operations manuals that are written, of course, in English, and you're going to go to a country that speaks a different language than English, who pays for the translation, and then how do you check it? How do you make sure and verify the translation is accurate? And then all of your marketing collateral, and especially when we start talking about the web. Are they going to have a parent-child relationship to your website? Are they going to have a standalone in-country website? Who's going to pay for all of the translations, and who's going to make certain that what you're saying on that site is appropriate within that language? So I think those are the three areas: the support in country, the operations manual customization to their language, the websites, what your strategy is going to be, and again the translation into that language.
And I agree with everything Joe just said, and we are, living that every single day. We will be opening our first location in Saudi Arabia in Jeddah next month. We found our Saudi partners and signed the agreement with them about the middle of last year. And we have made the decision that we're going to provide our support in English. They're going to be doing the translations, but you're exactly right. We need to verify that translation is correct, and we right now are working through that. They have translated the fastsigns.com website into Arabic, and we are now having a translation service verify that, that our brand is appropriately reflected in those translations, and that's a costly endeavor for us. What we chose to do is to have our own Saudi website there. We own the domain. We have created the infrastructure. We created the English versions of the Saudi Fast Signs website. They are creating the translated Arabic version and providing, they're making sure that the photography is appropriate both on the English and the Saudi version. But we own that domain. We host that domain. We have the control over that domain, which is part of what we want, we feel is very important to protect our brand.
Yeah, and I think another area, I think that's a wise strategy. I think another area that nascent franchisors that may not be as well established as Fast Signs or not have a CEO with as much experience as you, Catherine, is that they don't take care of their trademark issues in advance of going out there and selling. And they don't make sure that they have their brand name secure in the markets that they're going to sell into.
Well, heck, we see that even here in the United States, across state lines.
Yeah. And that is certainly work that we have undertaken going back some years ago. And the reality is the reason that we operate in Australia under a different brand name is when we were a very young franchise company back in, we were founded in 1985, and in 1986, someone was visiting Texas from Australia, saw the Fast Signs concept, went down to Australia and registered the name. Then later, a few years, when we decided it was time to expand, we went down there. We found an interested master license candidate, only to find out that someone had registered our name in Australia. So soon after that, we made sure that we had the rights to our names in all of the major countries we ever thought we might want to expand to.
You know, and we know this applies to other franchisors as well, including many well-established franchisors that have yet to explore international franchising. In your opinion, Catherine, when is it right for a franchisor to start franchising international or even explore the possibilities ahead of them in the international markets?
I think you really have to have a proven model and a brand that works and has very strong and healthy unit-level economics in the United States, and that you've got the systems and the procedures to support your franchisees here in the United States long before you start thinking about franchising internationally. I think it's really about taking your proven business model, your proven systems, and then adapting those proven systems and model to another country. So, and also, part of that decision is the CEOs and the management team's appetite for challenge. I mean, certainly we're very interested in aggressively growing the Fast Signs brand. We made that decision not too long after I got here. We've got the right executives and the right management team in place. We've got proven support. We consistently rank very, very high on franchise partner satisfaction, which is very important to us. And because of that very solid foundation and having a strong executive team with a lot of knowledge and skill set, we think it's the right time for us to expand internationally. But I think that foundation has to be solid. I have seen through my career in franchising many companies, young franchise companies, get excited because someone from a different country heard about them, wants to franchise. Yeah, you get that exciting lump sum franchise fee up front. But 3 years later, when that new franchisor or master licensee fails, that is really a blemish on your record. And then years later, you're going to try to expand in that country again, and you're going to be surprised how many people will know that your brand was there and failed. So you really have to make sure that you've got the foundation and the structure in place here and then launch it into other countries. And I think you need to do it in a very thoughtful way. Now, you might say we're interested in these five countries, and you might get a great qualified candidate from a different country. And then you have to evaluate whether your team can handle that.
Yeah, we often hear those stories about a franchisor being contacted by a wealthy individual from a foreign country, you know, inquiring about bringing the concept to their country. I mean, heck, I even heard of one recently where there's two locations in California, a small little American type of sandwich shop, and next thing you know, they have one in Saudi Arabia or one of the other Mideastern countries. It just doesn't seem like a recipe for success. Certainly seems like it could be a recipe for disaster. And even when, you know, the franchisor has never even considered that country as a target market, or even considered international franchising as part of their expansion strategy. But again, like you said, they have a large sum of money being wagged in front of them. And to your point and to Joe's point, not understanding that the costs are going to be far greater than they ever imagined, definitely seems like a recipe for disaster, without a doubt. Joe, can you expand upon that a little bit based upon your experience?
Well, I think one of the interesting things about Fast Signs going international is that they had an advantage in terms of the product that they sell. I don't know of a country on the planet that doesn't use signs. Unlike the obstacles that would be in front of, say, a beef hamburger chain that wants to all of a sudden expand in India. I mean, there's a huge problem in India if you want to be selling, you know, hamburgers made from beef. You're going to have to make a great deal of modification, as McDonald's certainly has proven a success there, but they're not a success because they're selling a lot of Big Macs. They're selling something else, their vegetable burgers or their burgers made with other proteins other than beef. So I think that Fast Signs was unique in the respect that you didn't have to gauge whether or not countries used signs. You may want to find out how many signs people use and how many businesses are there to see the size of the market, but you didn't have to figure out whether there would be a market. And I think the franchise
exactly. Yeah, exactly. It is easier for us
and franchisors wishing to go international, they're going to have to do that test in a much deeper drill down than what Fast Signs would have had to have done to explore going international. And I think that's probably what you've been saying, Paul, is that way too many franchisors jump on the international bandwagon without really thinking it through and without doing a detailed strategic plan and getting some intelligence on what's happening around the world in terms of franchising, you know, in every aspect. So I think that it's certainly something that is exciting. And to have somebody call you up from a foreign country and say they have a gazillion dollars and they want to invest in your brand is certainly flattering, and it can be a siren call to a rocky shoal, or it can be a great opportunity. You just have to really dot your I's and cross your T's to find out which it is.
Well, certainly. Go ahead, Catherine. I'm sorry.
Joe, I agree with you completely, and I will say that the sign business is easier to adapt to different countries, certainly than any food concept. But just taking a look at Saudi Arabia, one of the things that we did once we determined we really liked our partners there is we also determined what was the method in which we wanted to franchise. You know, we can franchise directly, we can do development agreements where all of those locations will be owned by our partners, or we could do a master license. And we are not interested at all in doing any master licensing unless we have a partner who is already very knowledgeable with franchising and has some experience either in the print or the sign business. So in Saudi, we are very excited about our partners, but we're requiring that those locations all be company-owned. Then at some point in the future, when they're running them very well, they've demonstrated that they really understand the business, then we might consider allowing them to sub-franchise and become a master licensee. But we think that, you know, it's challenging enough to learn how to run our business, let alone then to be a franchisor. That lays on a whole other level of complication and challenge. And you could have someone who's a very good operator operating a sign center but is not going to be a good franchisor. So part of that decision is which way are you going to expand internationally. But when we went and did our market survey in Saudi, we were amazed how much signage was there already. But the signage was very different than the signage in the United States. It was much bigger, a lot of very large prints, very grand format. But the quality was a lot less. So instead of going into Saudi with our standard, if you will, United States equipment package, we modified it for two reasons. One, supply chain is very different there. But two, grand format is very, very important there as opposed to just large format. But it does not have to be extremely high quality like it has to be in the United States. So what that means is from a distance, the sign looks great. You get up close to it and you see a lot of, if you will, the dots. You can see, you know, through the print. But in Saudi Arabia, that is accepted as a standard, and it's not a negative as far as the sign buyers or the sign viewers feel.
That's very interesting. We're franchised today. We're talking about international franchising. Our guest today is Catherine Monson, CEO of Fast Signs International, as she shares some of her experience in the recent foray into international franchising, and most recently in Puerto Rico. We're also discussing their expansion into Saudi Arabia. Catherine, you know, we hear about a lot of the different things with respect to franchising internationally, cultures, traditions, ways of doing business, et cetera. But obviously the benefits have to far outweigh all those challenges, and I agree with you, we won't call them negatives. They really are just challenges, and they are facts. Why should franchisors consider international franchising as part of their growth strategy?
Well, I mean, if they're interested in growing their brand and growing the company, it's another revenue stream. You know, the United States is just a small part of this big, beautiful, wonderful global world that we're in. And if you don't do it, your competitors will. I mean, I think it's a natural part of it, a smart executive's choice of how they're going to grow their company. They just need to make sure they have a good, solid foundation before they extend themselves internationally. But it's a great way to get further growth for your brand and for your company.
So we have a lot of discussions here on Franchise Today. Joe and I have had a lot of discussions about, you know, effective growth strategies of franchise organizations. We know in franchising that there's a lot of franchise brands out there that have not really got their arms around the proper way of expanding here in the United States. We hear similar stories with often catastrophic results where you have a strong brand in the Southwest and all of a sudden somebody's wagging that, you know, check from, you know, the Washington, D.C. area and saying, you know, I want to open up, you know, five stores in and around the Washington, Annapolis area. And then all of a sudden, you know, they jump. So with that in mind, and specifically for international franchising, you've mentioned that you've identified, you know, various international markets that you're taking Fast Signs to. So how does a franchisor identify the right markets?
Well, I think it starts with what their brand is and what they are selling. As an example, if you're a food concept and it's a very Western, and when I say Western, I mean U.S. kind of American food concept, you really have to think long and hard about whether that's going to work in a country such as India. I think that the beef example is the best one that you can share. But, you know, first off, I think language is the easiest to overcome. So other English-speaking countries, if you're in the United States, going to Canada certainly is logical, going to the UK, going to Australia, going to other English-speaking countries. And from there, I would take a look at your product and what it is that you sell and where is that a natural fit. Joe hit it right on the head. Every country that has a growing economy or a solid economy uses lots and lots of signs. So we just have an advantage in that our product is needed by companies that want to attract customers no matter where they are, whether they're located in South America, Mexico, Europe, or Asia. signage is needed as a way to inform, direct, and sell. So it's a real natural for us to expand. But then we also have to look at what is different about that culture and the business model. I mean, it really all comes down to unit-level economics. If you don't have good unit-level economics in the United States, you're probably not going to have good unit-level economics in other countries. And if your franchisees aren't making money, you're going to have a bad situation on your hands. There you might have to look at supply chain, very, very important. As an example, our first center that's opening in Saudi Arabia is opening with much more in-house equipment than we would ever open anybody in the United States. But that's because there are a lot of great vendors that support our franchisees in the United States. If you need to get something engraved or routed or sandblasted, and you open in any city in the United States, you're going to find a subcontractor or a vendor who will do that for you. That wasn't the case in Saudi Arabia. The only people that were doing that were other competitors, and they didn't seem so inclined in a positive way to be helpful to our franchisees. So there's a lot of things that you have to look at and to customize and make sure. So you might look at a country. I mean, we knew we wanted to expand into the Middle East. There's a lot of growth. There's a very strong economy there. But then we had to get even deeper down. Once we had a candidate, a partner that we liked, and we got through a letter of intent, we then did further market research and further analysis and supply chain research before we then went to the actual contract itself, because we did not want to get so far down the road that we would find that we couldn't fulfill on our promise of giving great support. And then we found supply chain was very different. The kinds of signage that's printed is very different. We needed to change what the equipment package was and bring additional equipment in. Now, we also had to make sure that our partner down there could afford to do that. In this situation, he could.
Mm-hmm. You know, we often see on television and the movies, you know, shots of, you know, Hong Kong and other major international markets, and we see these large signage like you talk about on a grand scale, and it stands out and it looks just like a jungle of signs. And, you know, of course we have signage here in the States, but it seems like over the last, you know, 20 or 30 years, you know, signage has, in addition to be, of course, on the pole and on the front of the building, signage has become a big part of, you know, point of sale, in the windows, et cetera. How does that work in international markets? Have they adapted to that type of signage marketing, if you would, in the stores like they have here in the United States?
I think if you look at most of the developed markets or developed countries, you would certainly see that that is the case. In fact, in many examples, they actually use more signage. You know, you think about all of the scenes you see of downtown Tokyo. I mean, you're exactly right. It is a wall of window graphics and digital signage and illuminated signs and billboards. And in some areas, there's actually more signage than you would see in a typical United States city.
What about when it comes to zoning or anything like that? Do you run into any of that in these international markets? Because, again, to look at Tokyo and Hong Kong, it doesn't look like there's much in the way of zoning.
Well, that's part of our market study that we do, is to verify or to understand what the zoning or other signage regulation requirements are. And that's just part of, we determine how we can support that franchise partner. If it's extremely onerous and very labor intensive to fill out all those forms and to get all those licenses and those permits, we have to build that into our pro forma business model for that particular country. Now, that was not the case. That was not the case in Saudi Arabia. Getting permits for Saudi Arabia is not too dissimilar from typical large cities in the United States.
What international market so far has been the most difficult for you?
When you say, what do you mean by most difficult?
Let's say the most challenging.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily say you. So we're talking about where we're already operating as a international franchisor, or places that we're looking to get into.
Where you're already operating.
Well, you know, have some challenges just in supporting Australia because of the very few hours of the day where they're open for business and we're open for business. You know, we're one of the other great things about Fast Signs as a business is that we are a Monday through Friday, typically 8 to 5 kind of operation, as opposed to food that can be open 7 days a week in very extended hours.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, our Sunday is their Monday, so when they have a problem on a Monday, that's really a struggle for them. We do have 3 full-time personnel on the ground in Australia, but very often the kinds of issues that someone's having, let's say it's an IT issue, it could very well be on our servers because we host their website here, their send-a-file functions here, their email here. So that's a challenge. Likewise, we might be on a Friday morning here thinking that, great, we want to talk to our folks down in Australia. Well, that's not going to work so well because that's their weekend. So sometimes there's that big time difference challenge that can make things a little bit more difficult. Now, the flip side of that is they're English-speaking, and it's much easier to communicate with them when we are communicating. It'll be interesting to see how it works with our new franchisees in Saudi Arabia once we get that center open. But I would say, well, where we are today, the time challenge is one. And then I'd also say we have a master licensee in Brazil. He does a wonderful job for us. But conversations with him are a little more challenging in that English is his second language, and I don't know any Portuguese. And so sometimes what you and I could cover in a half hour will take maybe 2 hours on a phone conversation because I've got to make sure that I'm understanding his question or I'm understanding his answer. And that can be challenging at times. And when we do things in writing, I might think I'm being very clear, but because his English is a second language, I may not be. And so I want to try to use smaller words, and I'm not saying anything negative about that, but, you know, some people write in a very verbose style and try to impress people with how many words they can use that have at least 5 syllables. That's not the way to communicate with your partner in a different country when English is the second language. We did
sure, and Joe and you, you had also touched on interpreters, and certainly at the leading edge of, you know, developing the contracts and forming the agreement and getting started. Obviously, as you mentioned, it's wise to have all that interpreted and verified and what have you. But now you're into the agreement, you're moving along. Is there a point where you have been using interpreters somewhere along the agreement where English might not be their second language?
We have not had that experience yet at Fast Signs for the time that I've been here. We used to have a Spanish-speaking business consultant who we also had support Brazil, but even though there would still be some issues because while Portuguese and Spanish are close, they're not the same.
Sure.
But we may very well, as we expand into other countries, we will certainly consider using interpreters.
Yeah, because, you know, Joe, as we've discussed on a previous show, that raises an issue of not being able to, you know, verify in real time in dealing with an interpreter. So certainly there's got to be a trust factor as you possibly might be talking to an interpreter well into the agreement as well.
I would imagine.
It's probably, I was fortunate when I was doing internationals that our partners had English speakers in the lead. English wasn't the first language, but they were very proficient. So I had to run into the
It seems, Joe, we have some technical difficulty on your line. You're all garbled up. Catherine, a couple of weeks ago, Nancy Weingartner, executive editor at Franchise Times, shared with us her real experience with recent international trade missions. She discussed some of the differences, you know, that she came across, you know, menu items that, you know, we talked about. And the trade mission was to the Philippines. There was one to Vietnam on the same trip earlier in the year. There was a trade mission to India. Of course, you've mentioned, you know, Saudi Arabia. We've touched on Australia. We've touched on, you know, Hong Kong and Tokyo. So now let's back up to Puerto Rico because, you know, many would say that expanding into Puerto Rico and of course, even into countries that have extremely close ties to the U.S., like Canada, really isn't international franchising, that international franchising really applies to the areas that, like we've just described, you know, including, you know, China and India, Brazil. What do you say to that, having experience in both of those type of regions and countries?
Well, I think that it is kind of an ugly American, quote-unquote, kind of philosophy if you think that Canada is the 51st state. Puerto Rico is very proud that they're a U.S. territory, but they definitely are different than doing business just in the United States. But, you know, if you just think about Canada, you've got to understand Canadian franchise law. If you're going to be doing business in Quebec, that's even a different way of franchising and a different franchise agreements and things. Everything has to be in French. So I think you need to be very cautious not to make the mistake of thinking that, you know, Canada or Puerto Rico are just simple extensions of the United States. I think you need to focus on what is different and unique. I mean, think about just in our business. There are, for the most part, different suppliers in Canada. So if we just think about the United States and don't also say, okay, that's great, we've negotiated a great discount on substrates and inks for our United States franchise partners, we now need to then find that vendor in Canada that can do the same thing for us. So I would caution anybody from thinking that Canada or Puerto Rico or, you know, are extensions of the United States. You might say, hey, you know, in the UK they speak English, in Australia it seems pretty westernized down there. They've got different franchise laws. They have different ways of spelling words. With our franchise partners in the UK and in Australia, when we create a marketing piece here, we need to make certain that it also works there. And we have found the best way to do that is to use either a UK or an Australian ad agency or boutique marketing person, because people dress differently. They tend not to smile in commercials or print advertising in the UK, where we've got big smiles when we're in the United States. So you have to be cautious and cognizant of those slight differences.
It's interesting. I think a lot of people would disagree that English is spoken in Australia and New Zealand. It's very difficult to understand at times, but I definitely understand what you're saying. And I appreciate the fact that you dispelled a myth that people also fall trap in believing, in that it's easier to franchise in international markets because we don't have the laws and the requirements like we have in the United States, and specifically within the registration states. And I'm glad that you brought up the fact about, you know, in Quebec you have to have the document in French as well as English, and obviously a lot of different countries have different franchise laws, and if anybody follows it online, there's certainly more and more laws popping up all over the place in every international market, without a doubt. Knowing what you know now, what would you do differently in your next expansion into an international market? Is there anything you would do differently?
Well, you know, we work very hard and have in the time that I've been here to be very sensitive to the cultural differences with potential candidates or franchise partners in other countries. And I think that that's a really important thing for anyone who's thinking about expanding internationally needs to take into account. And I was going to share with you and your listeners that there's a book that we have found to be very, very helpful called Kiss, Bow, or Shake Hands. And it's a guide to doing business in about 60 countries. But, I mean, it is very, very good. So before our partner from Saudi Arabia came over, not only did I read that, and did our, you know, Mark Jamieson, who's our senior vice president of franchise support and development, but we made certain that everybody in our building understood that we needed to be sensitive to the cultural differences. We set up a prayer room. We had to determine how to set that prayer room up appropriately and where to put the marker on the wall that would be pointed in the correct direction. We informed all of our employees, particularly our female employees, of the appropriate dress for that particular period of time that that partner would be here with us, because we wouldn't want to be wearing something that's appropriate for us but might be offensive to them. So I'm not sure that's a do differently, but I think it's really important to be sensitive to the cultural differences and make sure that everybody on your team who's going to be coming in contact with those people understand those cultural differences.
Yeah, I think that's very important. I've had experience even here in the States of working a lot with the Korean franchise candidates as well as Indian franchise candidates, and there are a lot of cultural things even to take into consideration here in the States. I've been through the whole, you know, blessing of the business and burning of this and burning of that, and it was really very, very interesting, and of course it is important to be absolutely respectful of it, but I could only imagine what it would be like in international markets, especially as you get out of the more, you know, modern countries and certainly into less modern countries, for lack of a better word. I mean, even into some third world countries where some franchisors have started to enter. So it really is, it takes a lot of thought, and I think it comes back down to the point of really determining that strategic planning is just so essential when exploring international franchising and then exploring it for a particular market. And I really cringe because I do know that there are franchisors out there that really don't spend enough time on strategic planning here in the States, and then I hear that they're venturing into foreign markets, and I really just have to shake my head, and I'm sure you agree on that as well.
Completely agree with you on that.
So, you know, perception. We've talked about, you know, the glorious side of it, you know, the lofty goals. We've talked about the realities. We've talked about, you know, the facts, as you very distinctly put it, and very greatly so. How is international franchising viewed by both your staff and your franchisees here in the States?
Well, I would say that our franchisees here in the United States are very excited to hear about the brand going to other countries. They're very proud of the brand, and they certainly see that as something that enhances the value of their particular franchise. I would say from a staff standpoint here at our corporate team, there's kind of a mixed bag, because I think there's a lot of excitement and thrill at growth, but I think there's also a real awareness now that this isn't as easy as franchising in the United States. It's a lot more complex. It takes more time. It takes more thought. It takes more energy. It takes more coordination. And I would say it's more than 2x what it takes to do in the United States. I mean, every single country is customized. Everything we do is customized. And it really is an added layer of challenge for every step of the development process, whether we're talking about the franchise sales process, or whether we're talking about getting that first center open, or whether we're talking about supporting them. So I would say, you know, overall that there's a excitement about our international development and a little bit of a deep sigh, are we ready for this? That's my guess.
Let me see if Joe, we have some technical problems resolved. Joe, did you have any last comments or maybe a last question for Catherine? Yeah, we still have, you're still all garbled, so I apologize for that. Catherine, you know, with respect to, you know, your franchisees here in the States, and obviously you mentioned a bunch of different ways of franchising internationally, master, et cetera. Do the franchisees here in the States understand that there's a difference in the franchise relationship from the domestic front to the international front? And if they do, is that an issue?
You know, I don't think that very many of them do understand that there is a difference. You know, we have a master licensee in Brazil. I think they're proud to know that there are a dozen or so Fast Signs locations in Brazil, but I don't think that they understand that the actual owners of those locations are sub-franchisees of a master. And I, for the most part, I don't think that they care. And that's interesting. I've never had any of our domestic franchise partners ask about that.
Well, that's, I mean, that's good. And I think that probably has a lot to do with, as well as you've communicated, what your plans are and full transparency, so it doesn't, you know, basically hit them as a surprise. So when they understand it up front, obviously, it certainly makes things a lot better. Any last bits of advice you'd like to share with our listening audience?
Well, it's nothing new that we haven't already covered in this first hour. It's all about planning, about having a good foundation, and making sure that you don't jump too fast.
Well, I think that's very good, succinct advice. Certainly, everybody should definitely heed that advice when exploring international franchising. Real quick, we do have a couple of minutes. I know you're very active and serve on the board of the IFA. What would you tell the many young franchisor listeners that we have that have yet to join the IFA?
The International Franchise Association is committed to helping franchisors implement best practices that are going to make their franchise networks more successful. If you're not a member, you need to be. Particularly in today's legislative and regulatory climate, the disgruntled franchisee who goes and speaks to their lawmaker is going to be a negative, I think, to everybody in franchising. So it's important that you get involved in the IFA. You learn from the best practices. The IFA has so many resources, so many of them for free. You become a member, we have very affordable dues for your first couple years. As a franchisor member, we have lots of best practices handbooks that you get for free. We have a lot of webinars and training. I know we have a wonderful mentorship program where you could be mentored by a seasoned franchise executive. And the people who are mentors give their time because they're so passionate and committed to franchising and making sure that franchising remains successful. I can't say enough good things about the value of the International Franchise Association. As a new franchisor, you're really missing a great resource if you're not a member of the IFA.
Yeah, I agree. And I really appreciate you taking the time out of what must be an unbelievably busy schedule, and I appreciate you taking the time out of it to be our guest today.
Well, it has been my pleasure, Paul and Joe, and I look forward to doing it again sometime in the future.
Well, that would be great. We would look forward to it and explore a little bit further into international franchising and some other things. Next week, as Joe mentioned earlier, we have a replay of Bob Coleman, the editor of the Coleman Report. That was a great episode, great segment of Franchise Today a couple of months ago. We've had a lot of interest in learning more about it and listening to it again. Of course, it is available on demand. But we'll be leading into the next week with Ron Feldman, CEO at Franchise America Finance. So I think it'll be a good one-two show. And then, of course, Brad Fishman will follow up, giving us a summary of the franchise on conference. Until next week, or actually the week after, my name is Paul Segretto, wishing you the best, the very best, in this great thing we call franchising, and Franchise Today is out.